We're holding on Kufyat Ches Amud Beis, 13 lines from bottom. We learned yesterday, well, the Mishnah had said about rules about not buying certain things from shepherds or from women or whatever, where there's a concern that they may have stolen them. And the Braisa had expanded on that as far as shepherds and said various things you're not allowed to buy from them where there's concern they may try to steal them from the flock without the owner noticing. But we said, on the other hand, there are things that you could buy from them, like in larger amounts. So first of all, we said things that the owner is not going to be machmir on in the first place. For example, milk, when the animals are being grazed out in the desert, the owner is not going to schlep out there to get the milk or the cheese. But also things where it's a larger amount. For example, we said 4 or 5 sheep or 4 or 5 fleeces, because such a large amount the owner would notice, and therefore we're not concerned that the shepherd may be trying to steal them because it would easily be noticeable. So you wouldn't be trying to get away with it. So now the Gemara says, we said you can buy from them 4 or 5 sheep or 4 or 5 fleeces of wool. So the Gemara says, why 4 or 5? If we're allowed to buy 4, do you need to say 5? Why doesn't it just say that you can buy 4? And the answer is, it means if he has 5 sheep and he's selling you 4 of them, then you're allowed to buy those 4, because clearly then he's not trying to get away with anything, because he knows obviously that the owner is going to notice if 4 of them are gone. Others say, another version is that Rav Chisda says, if it's a small flock, then you can buy a maximum of 4. If it's a large flock, then you can buy 5. Or not a maximum, a minimum of 4. But if it's a large one, then you could buy 5. Because if it's a small, so not like the first Lashon where it davka means a flock of 5 sheep. In the second version, it could be it's a smallish one, it's 6 or 7 or whatever, but 4 of them missing would be very noticeable. Therefore, we figure the shepherd must be doing it legitimately. And if it's a large flock of 15 or 20 or whatever it is, then the same thing, 5 would be very noticeable. And therefore, if he sells them, then you can buy from him. But if it's a smaller flock, for example, you wouldn't be able to buy all 4 of them or all 5 of them or whatever. Okay. So the Gemara says, how gufa kasha. Now you have another contradiction in the Braisa. Amrit dalad vehetsa and dalad vehegizin. You're saying you can buy 4 or 5 sheep or 4 or 5 fleeces, implying dalad vehe ein abo sholosh loy, implying you can't buy only 3 because 3 the shepherd might be trying to get away with it. But then the Braisa had continued, but you can't buy 2 sheep or 2 fleeces, huh? Sholosh zabninen, implying, but you could buy 3. So what is it? Can you buy 3 or can you not? And the answer is, like kasha, it depends whether they're healthy animals or large fleeces, or whether they're small and weak ones. So healthy ones, then, because they're healthy and large and noticeable, the owner will notice if 3 of them are missing. Therefore, you'd be allowed to buy 3, because we assume the shepherd is not going to try to sell them unless he's legitimately allowed to. As opposed to if they're weak animals, the loss of 3 of them may not be so noticeable. So then you can't buy 3 from him either. Then the minimum you can buy is 4. Okay. We said in the Braiser of Yehuda, we said Rabbi Yehuda had made a distinction and said you're allowed to buy Baisius, the animals that come home regularly and sleep in the house or in the yard or whatever overnight. The point being, because they come home every day, then the owner will notice if any of them are missing, and then he'll call the shepherd on it and find out what's going on. So therefore, the shepherd is afraid to steal, and therefore we can assume that he's selling legitimately. But midborius, but if it's the ones that stay out in the desert, the ones that stay out in the fields, more longer term, then you can't buy from him. So what is Rabbi Yehuda referring to? Is he referring to the Resha and being Machmir? Here the Tanakhama had said, without making a distinction between Baisius and Midborius, that you're allowed to buy from them, that you're allowed to buy from them 4 or 5 sheep, depending on the circumstances, as we said, when you can buy 4 and when you can buy 5. And then Rabbi Yehuda is being Machmir on that and says only if they're Baisius. So you'd need both. That it needs to be, for example, according to the second version of Rav Chisda, only if it's a large flock of sheep can you buy at least 5. but they have to be Biceus. So is he doing like that? Or Dumas Sefer, Coriolacula? Or is he referring to the Sefer and he's being makel? That in the Sefer, where we said you can't buy two, Rabbi Yehuda would be saying you could buy two if they're Biceus because the owner would notice. So the Gemara teaches out. Aresha koyo l'chumra de Omar, namely the Tanakama had said where the Tanakama had said you could buy four or five sheep from the shepherd, four or five depending on the circumstances, and sort of Yehuda would be saying hani mili baisis. Sort of Yehuda would be saying this that you can buy four or five is only when they're baisis. So then the owner will notice right away if some of them are missing because in the evening they come home. Av midborius afil abav chamishaloi. But when it comes to midborius, you wouldn't even be allowed to buy four or five from a small or a large flock because the owner it may take some time until the owner notices they're missing. So that's one way of learning Rabbi Yehuda. Or Jomah Sefer, Koryo Lakula. Or maybe Rabbi Yehuda is going on the Sefer and he's being makel to Omar Avaloy State Soin Veloy State Yizin, where the Tanakhama had said you can't buy two sheep or two fleeces. Because since that's a small amount, the owner may not notice that they're missing. Therefore, the shepherd may figure he can try to steal them and get away with it. So then we would say maybe Rabbi Yehuda is saying hani mili midborius that would only apply to the midborius because then the owner may not notice. I will bisis, but when it comes to the ones that sleep in the house or in the yard every night, shtayim nami loichin, then you'd be allowed to buy two as well because the owner would notice. So what does Rabbi Yehuda mean? So the Gemara says Tashma, we can prove from a brisa that states it more clearly. Rabbi Yehuda omer loichin bisis mehen, you're allowed to buy bisis animals from the shepherds, the ones that come home every night. Vein loichin mehen midborius, you're not allowed to buy the midborius from them because since they stay away from the house for weeks or months at a time, then the shepherd may figure the owner is not going to notice. But in all places, whether midborius or biceus, you're allowed to buy four or five sheep. So since he's saying that in any place you're allowed to buy four or five, Shmamina Sefer Koyo Lakula, that shows that he's referring to the Sefer of the original Braisa and he's going Lakula. So the Tanakhama is saying the Tanakhama is not drawing a distinction between Biceus and Midborius. He's saying regardless, you're allowed to buy four or five and even three, as we said before, if the animal is strong and healthy, and the loss of three of them would be noticeable, but not two. Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that you're always allowed to buy four or five. So Rabbi Yehuda would be saying you're always allowed to. The Tanakhama is saying that you're allowed to that you're not allowed to buy two from them. But he's saying b'chol mokum, in all places you're allowed to buy four or five. And since he's saying b'chol mokum, so that means that he's saying when is he distinguishing between Biceus and Midborius when it comes to the two sheep. So the Tanakhama would say you can never buy two sheep from them, and Rabbi Yehuda would say if they're Biceus then you could, because then the owner will notice two sheep are gone as well. Shmamina, so that proves that is what Rabbi Yehuda holds. The basic rule is, again, as the Braisa was saying, whatever the owner is likely to notice is missing, you're allowed to buy. Because then we can assume the shepherd was doing it legitimately because he'd be afraid to be found out stealing. The Mishnah had continued. We said similarly, the same way as you can't buy certain things from shepherds, the same way you can't buy from people whose job it is to guard the fruit while it's growing to make sure nobody steals it. You're not allowed to buy from them wood or peiros because again, there's a concern that they may have stolen that wood or they may have stolen those peiros and now they're selling them. And again, you can't be mechazik yidei over avera. You can't encourage them and abet them in their stealing by buying from them. Now, though, the Gemara says Rav Zavin Shabishta Me'arisa. Rav, it says on the side of here. Actually, it should be Rav. Anyway, or Rav, a different Gersos. Anyway, Rav, whichever one it is, bought branches from an oris. So an oris, we know, is somebody you have a field or a vineyard, and you hire an oris to manage it, and you give him a percentage of the crop. So now Rav or whichever Amora it is, Rav or Rabba, bought some of these branches from an oris. So Abai says, what about what it says in our Mishnah that you can't buy wood and peiros from a watchman? Isn't this guy like a watchman? Amalei, so Rav tells him, no, Hanimili Shoim, Hanimili Bishoim. No, that would only apply when you're talking about a Shoimer, the Lesle Begufa de Aramidi. He's not entitled to any percentage of the crop from the land. He gets his pay, but that's about it. So therefore, there's a concern that while he's watching, he may grab some branches or some fruit, figuring nobody's going to notice, and then try to sell them. Aval Oris to Isle Begabe, but an Oris who does own a certain percentage of the crop from the field, because after all, that's the difference between an Oris and a, we're going to learn in Bava Metzia in a few months, Be'ez Hashem, that there's a difference between an Oris and a Choicher. An Oris is somebody who gets a percentage of the crop. Then you have, there's a Choicher where he gets a certain fixed amount of the crop, regardless of how the season went. And then you can have a soicher where he rents it for money. But in this case, the point is that an oris has a percentage of the he has a percentage of the crop. So therefore, the expression in the Gemara, we have the expression isle begave, he has in it, which implies that he owns a percentage of the character. He doesn't, in fact. So Tosfos does actually mention elsewhere that an oris actually is considered to be a certain part owner of the crop itself. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who have a different girsa that he doesn't own anything of the karka, but the point is he owns a certain percentage of the peris. So therefore, ema bin nafshe kamazabin. Therefore, it's more likely, says Rav, that he's selling out of something that belongs to him himself, and therefore that's legitimate to buy. Okay, the Gemara continues. Tananabon and Shomer Peiris. These people who are watching Peiris, Loichin Mehen Chen Yoshvin and Moichin, you are allowed to buy from them when they're sitting in one place and selling, because they're obviously doing it on the up and up. Vasalin Lefnehem, and they have baskets of fruit in front of them. Vetortani Lefnehem, and they have a large set of scales in front of them. So obviously they're doing it so publicly and in full view of everybody, they're obviously not selling something which is stolen, because then they would do that in little amounts and in secret. So that would be allowed, even though they're Shomer Peiros, because they're obviously selling something that actually legitimately belongs to them. The Kulan Sh'omru Hatmein, but as we learned in the Mishnah, if they say to the buyer, hide what you just bought, also, then that would be also, because why they're telling you to hide it must be because because it is actually stolen after all. And similarly, you're allowed to buy from them when they're sitting in front of the garden, but not when they're sitting behind the garden because the same idea. In other words, when they're sitting in front of the garden, they're obviously doing it for Fahesia, and therefore it shows that they're not afraid of anybody, and therefore they're not selling anything stolen. But if they're doing it from the back of the garden, then it's more likely that they're doing it out of sight, because they're trying to get away with something. Okay, Itmar. Now we have a discussion of Amiroyim. Gazlan me'emas mutu liknas hemenu. At what point are you allowed to buy from a Gazlan? Meaning, in other words, so you have... not everything a Gazlan sells is stolen. After all, I mean, a Gazlan does have certain assets of his own. There is actually an explanation that says that we're talking about where a Gazlan did tshuva, but the majority of Rishonim don't understand it that way. They just say, in other words, that even we're talking about the guy has not done tshuva, but nevertheless, you can't say that every single thing he owns is stolen. So how would you draw the line? Rav Oma Achate Roiv Mishaloi, Rav says only if the majority of what he owns is his own. And Shmuel says even if only a minority belongs to him. Now the Marshal explains that actually we don't mean if it's Vade Gezel, then even Shmuel is going to agree you can't do that. We're talking about if there's a suspicion of Gzela even on most of his money, then you'd still be able to buy from him. Because we can say, even if there's a miut belongs to him, you can say, you know what he's giving you or what he's selling you, it may well be from his own thing. So the Gemara says, Ori le Rav Yehuda la Ada Daila. Rabbi Yehuda gave a psak din to Ada Dila. Ada is his name. Dila, Rashi over here translates as Shamash Drabonon, the one who serves the Chachamim. There are various other places where Rashi explains that a Dila is something more like a police officer or whatever. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda passed unto him to Divrei Omer, for the Miut Shaloi, in accordance with the opinion of Shmuel, that even if the Miut is his, then you're allowed to buy from him. And in fact, there is a machlokas rishonim who, in the end, the halacha is like. On the one hand, it's a matter of dinim mominus, and usually in dinim mominus, the halacha is like Shmuel. On the other hand, our Mishnah seems to go better according to Rav, because it was saying who you can't buy from because there's a concern of gezel and all, and that would fit better with Rav's opinion. And then also, there's a way of looking at it that maybe it's not so much a matter of dinim mominus, it's a matter of iser v'heter, what you're allowed and not allowed to do. And in those, the halacha is like Rav. So you have different opinions of rishonim who the halacha is like. Okay. Next, here's another case. Momoin Moser. Now, we talked the other day about a Moser, somebody who masers on Jews, on the possessions of Jews to the government. We said it's absolutely also. We said he's considered like a gazlan. We said there can even be a case where a person is threatening to do that and you're allowed to kill him, as we had in the story of Rav Kahana and Rav. So now, what about the money of his? What about his money and his possessions? Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, chadama mutal abde biyad, chadama also abde biyad. Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda disagree. One of them says you're not allowed to destroy it with your hands. Now, Rishonim say, even according to that opinion, you'd be allowed to do things of gaumi and whatever, like we talked about before, where you're not directly touching it, but doing something which is going to cause a hesitate. But that opinion would say you still, so one opinion would say you'd actually be allowed to destroy it with your bare hands. And the other one says, also, la'abde biyad, you wouldn't be allowed to destroy it with your hands. Why? We'll explain in the Gemara in a second. So man de amam mutal abde biyad lo yehev mamonech chomer migufay. The opinion that says that you could destroy it. Look, after all, his guf is he's chayev misa for being a moiser, as we learned before, where he's threatening to go moiser to go maser, or where he's done it regularly in the past and we know he's going to do it again. Then we have the right to kill him. Well, his money can't be more chomer than his body. So therefore, it should be allowed to destroy his money and his property, according to that opinion. The one who says you're not allowed to destroy it, he says it's true. He himself is chayav misa. But nevertheless, what if he has children who are good? And after all, the pasuk says Yochin Rosha, but Tzadik Yobash. The Rosha prepares something, and the Tzadik ends up wearing it. The actual pasuk doesn't say the word Rosha; it just says Yochin, but Tzadik Yobash. But that's what it means. The context is talking about a Rosha, that sometimes a Rosha prepares and has a whole huge amount of wealth, and the purpose of it is the Eibishter makes that happen in order that eventually it goes to the Tzadik, who ends up wearing it. So the same way over here, this guy, the Moser, is a Rosha, but his children may be okay, and therefore you don't want to be ma'abed his mammon in order that his children should be able to inherit it. That's how the halacha is paskin. So in fact, you are allowed to kill the moiser if necessary, but not to touch his money because it may go to his children who may be better than he is. The post can say similar things, for example, about a mummer. If you have somebody who shmadzich, rachman al-Tzlan, similar idea that you want to make sure that his mammon is available for his yoshin. Okay, another example of a Rosha of a Rosha preparing something and a tzaddik getting it. Rav Chista Havalei Hahu Arisa. Rav Chista had an oris to have a tokil v'yosi, to have a tokil v'yohiv, tokil v'shokil. This oris, where again he's entitled to a percentage of the crop, he would weigh out the amount that he's going to give to Rav Chista, tokil v'shokil, and then he would weigh out the amount from himself. So he would be medactic and not be mevater any of his part. So Rashi actually says two explanations. One is that he is supposed to be taking half and half, but he's being very medactic, where normally an oris should be a little more generous towards the other person. Well, in Bava Basra, the Gemara talks about halachas. When you're weighing things, you're supposed to tilt the scale a little bit in favor of the other person. So this guy wasn't doing that. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is he's taking more than his share, because usually an oris would take one third of the crop, and here he's taking a full half. Anyway, Salke. So Rav Chista fired him. Korah nafshe, and he applied to himself the pasuk, another pasuk about a tzaddik and a rasha, v'tzofu matzaddik cheo choyte. There is hidden for the tzaddik the wealth of the sinner. So in other words, Rav Chista, being a tzaddik, is going to, and then the oris is a choyte, so his wealth was being saved up for Rav Chista, that now that Rav Chista has fired him, then he can take back, he doesn't have to give that portion, that percentage that he would have had to give the oris, he's able to keep it. Now that's according to Rashi again, that was saying that the oris was either being medactic and not giving Rav Chista the little extra that he should have, or that he was taking more than his percentage. Different other Maushos has another possibility. After all, I mean, that's not a reason to call the guy a Rasha, those reasons that Rashi says. So rather, Maushos says the vote is this guy was using different sets of weights on his scales. He was using the smaller weights when he's weighing out for Rav Chista and the larger weights that have the same name on them when he's weighing out for himself. And that's an outright issue in the Torah in several places, that you're not allowed to have different size weights that pretend to be the same thing. So therefore, he really does deserve to be branded as a Rasha, and Rav Chista is entitled to fire him and take back the percentage that he would have had to otherwise give him. Ben Yoyada says another way of looking at it is not so much different size weights for the scales, but rather that the guy was weighing out Rav Chista's portion when the grain was fresh, and therefore, and each kernel therefore weighs more. And afterwards he's weighing out his own portion when it's dry, and therefore each kernel weighs less, and therefore he's getting more kernels out of it. And Rav Chista didn't like that. More on this topic of this, we've been talking throughout the last few prokim about this, about the dinim of gezel. So now let's have a little bit of agadah on the subject of how severe the issue of gezel is. The pasuk says, "Ki matikvas chonif ki yivza." This is actually a few psukim earlier. This is actually a few psukim earlier than the pasuk Yochin Rosha Vatzadik Yobash. This is all talking about the a Rosha, basically Eov is saying in a speech over there why it's not good to be a Rosha, because what good does it do? A person amasses a whole fortune and it ends up and he ends up losing more than he gained. So he says, "Ki matikvas chonif ki yivza." What does the chonif, the hypocrite, gain when he steals? Yivza is like stealing, like boitzea beirach niyat Hashem. Ki yeshel alekan nafshay. When Hashem will yeshel his nesham. So what does yeshel mean? Literally, yeshel means to throw it away. So what does that mean? Rav Huna and Rav Chista. So now Rav Huna and Rav Chista argue what the pasuk means. One says that it refers to the soul of the nigzol, that the pasuk is saying, in other words, that Hashem is saying, you gazlan, what makes you think you're going to escape Hashem's punishment? Still, even if you pay back what you were supposed to, still you stole the other guy's neshama, and therefore Hashem is going to punish you for that. The other one says that the pasuk means that Hashem is going to take away the gazlan's neshama. What good does what does a gazlan think he's going to accomplish with his gzela when Hashem is going to take away his own neshama in punishment for it? So Manda Omer Nafshishal Nigzal, the one who says that it means that he stole the nefesh of the Nigzal when he stole, meaning, in other words, even he pays back later, but he can't repay that. He learns Dichtiv, because you have a different pasuk that expresses a similar idea. Kain Orchus Kobrit Sea Botza, this is the way of everybody who steals, as nefesh ba'olav yikach, they take the soul of the owner of the money. So therefore we see from that stealing, and there it clearly says nefesh ba'olav, so it doesn't mean the nefesh of the gazlan. So we see from that stealing from somebody is like taking away his neshama. So now, therefore, the pasuk in Eov is, according to that opinion, is saying the same thing. Or Manda Amanafshesh or Gazlan, the opinion who says that it's the nefesh of the Gazlan, that it's warning the Gazlan, don't think you're going to get away with it. Hashem will take away your neshama, dichtiv, because we have another pasuk that expresses that idea. Al tigzol dol ki dalhu, don't steal from the poor person, even though he's poor, meaning even though you might think, well, what is there already to steal from him? But al tadake oni bashar, and don't humble or crush the poor person in the gate, which means Rashi says that you have maisa oni and leket shikha and peah. All of those things are referred to in the Torah as bishar recha, that they're divided up in the gates of your city. So don't disappoint the poor person by keeping those things and not giving them. And the next pasuk continues, ki Hashem yoriv rivam. because Hashem will fight on their behalf. The kova as kov ahem nafesh, and he will steal the soul from the ones who steal from them. The word kova means to steal. So we see from that pasuk that it's warning that Hashem takes away the neshama of the gazlan in punishment for him stealing. Okay, the Gemara says ve'idach nami hoksiv nefesh ba'al of yikach. So new, the first explanation, so the second explanation that's a nafshish or gazlan. Then how does he understand the pasuk, the first pasuk from Mishlei that we quoted as nefesh ba'al hoksiv as hoksiv nefesh ba'al of yikach? So we see that stealing involves taking away the neshama of the person who was stolen from. So how does he understand that if he's saying that that kiyeshal or the kan nafshay refers to the nefesh of the gazlan? And the answer is, he would say, my ball of the hashta. On the contrary, the word ba'olav in that pasuk, nefesh ba'olav, means the one who now has the money. As we've been learning through the last two prokim and previously in Perek Merubah, there are many circumstances under which the ganav or the gazlan acquires and is now considered to be the owner of the thing he stole. Well, that opinion says, well, that's exactly what the pasuk in Mishlei is saying then, that kein orchus kol betzei abotza, this is the way of anybody who steals, as nefesh ba'olav, the neshama of the current owner of the item that now he stole. Stolen. Now it became his. According to Halacha, Yikach, Hashem is going to take away his neshama because the fact is he did something wrong in the first place by stealing it. So v'idoch nami hoksiv akoves kaveim nafesh. What about the opinion that says that it means nafshishol nigzal? What about the pasuk says that Hashem will take away the soul of the gazlan? And the answer is matam kamar. That amora would say that it does mean that v'kovas kaveim nafesh does not mean he'll steal the neshama of the one who stole from them. It means that no matam kamar. It's giving a reason. You have to break up those words v'kovas kaveim nafesh matam v'kovas kaveim. Why will Hashem steal the nefesh of the gazlan and take away the nefesh of the gazlan mishum dekavi nefesh, because they had stolen a nefesh? So in other words, v'kovas kaveim, Hashem will steal and take away the neshama from the one who stole. Why? Because nafesh, because previously they had stolen a soul. So therefore, so they can understand, so that opinion can understand the Eov's expression, ki yeshal ala ka nafshay, as referring to begin with, he took away the nigzol's neshama, what makes him think he's going to escape punishment. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Amar Rav Yechanan, kol hagozel's chaveda shava prota. A person steals from somebody else, even a shava prota. Ki'ilu noto neshmasim imenu. It's as if he took away his neshama. Shenemar, as the pasuk that we quoted before says, kein orches kol betzei abotza. This is the way of anybody who steals money. And kol would mean anybody who steals, even the smallest amount. As nefesh ba'ol of yikach. He's taking the neshama of the owner. Now, before we said that there can be another way of understanding it means the owner, the current owner of the money. But Rabbi Yochanan is taking it in the simpler sense that it means the original owner of the money, along with that pruta, he took away his neshama as well. Ve'oimer, and Rabbi Yochanan continues, there's another proof of this, concept, where the pasuk says the Navi is warning the Jewish people what's going to happen if they continue doing Averis, and Nebuchadnezzar and his army is going to come. And the pasuk says, the enemy armies will eat your harvest and your bread, your sons and your daughters. The actual pasuk says, they'll eat up your sons and daughters. So we see, in other words, that when they eat sircha v'lachmecha, it's as if he's eating up your children, because now you don't have what to support them with. So it's tantamount to eating them up and killing them. Rachman al-Tzlan. V'oimer, and you have another pasuk. Rabbi Yechanan says, Hashem says, I'm going to punish the nations that harass the Jewish people, mechamas bnei Yehuda, because of the violence they did against the children of Yehuda, asher shofchu dam naki ba'artzam, where they spilled innocent blood in their land. So we see, in other words, now it's only they only did chomas, which means stealing from them, or even technically chomas means that they chomas often in the Gemara means that they actually are paying for it, but still the fact that they stole the produce is considered as though they stole. As though they spilled their blood. Va'omer, and you have another pasuk, Hashem, that where there's a famine in David HaMelech's times, and David asks the Urim V'Tumim, and he gets back the answer El Shol Vel Beis Adomim, because of Shol and because of the house of blood, Al Shehemis is a Givonim, because Shol had killed the Givonim. Whereas the Gemara is going to point out soon that it doesn't mean he actually killed them b'yadayim; it means that he took away their parnasa. So we see that taking away their parnasa is tantamount to killing them. So the Gemara says, "My va'omer." Why does Rabbi Yochanan have to bring four different psukim to express the same idea? So like this, the chitema, because based on the first pasuk, as nefesh ba'ol of yikach, nefesh didei, you would say, okay, so it means if a person steals, then Hashem will take away, then it's considered as though he took away the neshama of the person he stole from. Aval nefesh bonim of noisavloi, but maybe it's not considered that he's stealing the lives of his sons and daughters. So maybe he's not punished for that. Toshma, therefore, Rabbi Yechanan brings from the second pasuk. Therefore, Rabbi Yechanan brings from the second pasuk. Toshma b'sar bonav of noisa, the banecho of neisecha, as it says in the pasuk, when the goyim take away the produce of the Jewish people, it's considered as though they ate up their sons and daughters. So Hashem punishes them not only for the neshama of the actual person who owned the produce, but also of his sons and daughters, where they would have been eating it. And now they don't have what to eat, and they don't have what to support them. And now you might then argue that only applies when the Gazlan does not pay money for it. So he took something without even paying for it, then therefore he's held guilty for all the lives that were affected by that. Maybe it wouldn't apply where he's paying money for it after all. So now the other guy didn't want to sell it. He's forcing him to sell it and giving him money. That's the definition of chomas or chamsan in Gemara terminology. So maybe then that's not such a problem. He did pay him for it after all. No, Toshma, the pasuk continues. Mechamas b'nei Yehuda asher shofcho dom noki ba'artzachem or ba'artzam is how the pasuk says it. That the pasuk blames the goyim for the chomas, which again means that they did take it, but they did pay for it, but they did take it. The gezel, I consider it as though they spilled that dom noki, as though they spilled innocent blood in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Because after all, you know, so you got money for it. Fine. What does that help? The fact is, you can't eat money. So therefore, it causes hardship to the person from whom it was stolen. You still might argue maybe all that only applies where he does something via dayim. He actually steals with his hands. Maybe it's not such a problem if he only did it indirectly. No, Toshma, therefore we have the fourth pasuk, El Shovel, Beis Adam, Al Shehem, Sagivonim, where the Jewish people are suffering a famine because Shol had killed the Givonim, and as we know, what does it mean he killed the Givonim? Where do we ever find Shol killing the Givonim? Now there is, the Medrash actually says that when he killed Noiv Irakonim, there were some Givonim caught in the crossfire and seven of them were killed, but the Gemara doesn't take up that. The Gemara assumes that it means he never killed any actual Givoni. But because Shol killed all the people of Noiv, the city of Koinim, because he suspected they were colluding with David, whatever, you have the whole story in Sefer Shmuel over there, so you must speak in the Hamayim Mazen. And they were supplying water and food for the Givonim. Now, the Givonim are working as Choit Ve'etzim, V'shoi V'mayim. They're drawing water and chopping wood for the Mishkan, and to a certain extent for the Kohenim in general and Noiv. But nevertheless, Marashah says the Givonim themselves may not have lived in an area where there's water available to them, and therefore the Kohenim had to supply them with water. And because now Shol killed the Kohenim, and therefore cut off that Parnasa of the Givonim, Malal Lavakosav Kila Horgan, therefore the Pasuk counts it as though he killed them. So we see that even where it was only a Groma, then nevertheless he's blamed as if he killed them. So we need all those four psukim, because each pasuk tells us a greater chiddush over the previous one about how when a person steals, he's also taking away the other person's neshama, and therefore that brings us to, it means that he has to ask mechila, and he has to realize how serious it is to steal even a pruta. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, we said that now first the Mishnah had listed things you're not allowed to buy because there's a concern. Again, you're not allowed to buy wool and milk and so forth from the shepherds or wood or peiros from Shomer Peiros. But we said you are allowed to buy from women clay tsemer b'Yehuda or clay pishtan megolov agolam b'sharon. You're allowed to buy woolen clothing from them in Yehuda, where they regularly made woolen clothing and sold it, and you're allowed to buy linen clothing from them in the Galil, same thing, and you're allowed to buy calves from them in the Sharon, where we, as we learned yesterday, the Sharon either means where they graze them out in full view of everybody, or the Sharon is a particular region of Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, so the Gemara says, like we said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to buy woolen garments from women in Yehuda and linen garments from them in the Golo, because those are normal things they sell, and we assume that it comes from their own, from what they're entitled legally to sell. Ava lo yenis shmonim uslosis, but you're not allowed to buy wine or oil or flour from women because she made them. That's not something that women usually sell. Usually men sell those. They don't usually make their wives a shliach to do that, so she may have stolen it. Veloy min havodim. You're not allowed to buy these things from avodim either, because again, there's a concern that the eved may have stolen it from his master. Veloy min atinoikas, and not from children. Same thing. Abba Shol says not necessarily. No, a woman would be allowed to sell, and you would be allowed to buy from her 4 or 5 dinars worth of wine or whatever. Enough to be able to buy or to make a kippah, a tichel for her head. Such a small amount, 4 or 5 dinar. The husband's not going to be makbid, so therefore there's no concern that it was stolen. And again, as we learned in the Mishnah and as we learned previously in the Gemara, if they tell you to hide it, then it's also because then it shows that there's something fishy over there. Continues the Braisa. Gaboy tzedakah loichem en davamur. When it comes to gaboy tzedakah, so people who are going around collecting tzedakah, and when they are collecting tzedakah, loichem en davamur, they are allowed to collect from the women or from the avodim or from the kanim, they would be allowed to collect from them davar mort, a small amount for tzedakah, because again, the owner is not makbid on such a thing. Avaloi davar merubah, but not a large amount, because there's a concern that they might actually be stealing it, and they're giving it without the das of the balabas. Vahabadodin, as far as people who own olive presses, you're allowed to buy from them. Olives or oil. The midah, when they're selling it in large quantities, but not small amounts of olives or small amounts of oil, because there's a concern that they may be trying to take it without the owner knowing. The owner of the Beis Habad himself doesn't own the olives or the oil. He rents out the place to other people who are going to be pressing their olives. So actually it has two explanations. One is, it means that when the people who own the Beis Habad, you're allowed to buy from their wives, you're allowed to buy large amounts of olives or of oil, or because again, then they're selling with a hesia, so that's different. Before, we said you can't buy oil from women because they don't usually sell it, but when her husband owns a Beis Habad, then you would be allowed to, because again, then since her husband is in that business and she's selling such a large quantity, then it means that she's doing it. Since she's doing it so publicly, she's obviously not stealing it, because she knows her husband is going to know about it. The second explanation of Rashi is b'muat, means b'matan. The matan is the vat where the olives are placed to soften up before you start pressing them. So you wouldn't be allowed to buy from that, because it's not normal to sell them from that location. And therefore, it means that there's a concern that she may be stealing it. So you're allowed to buy from them. You're allowed to buy from them b'midah, in large amounts, but not b'more. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer Loichim Minoshim Zaysim B'moyed B'Golol Elyon. Reb Shimon Gamliel says you are allowed to buy olives from women b'moyed, meaning during chalamoyed, B'Golol Ha'Elyon, in the upper Galil, which is the mountainous parts of the north of Eretz Yisrael, like the areas of Miron and Sfas and whatever. You would be allowed to buy from them. Bamoyed would be doing chalamoyed. And that means, in other words, so the and the Ravid explains that the girsa that Rashi and the Ravid have a girsa bamuot. So therefore, it means small amounts. So in other words, even though we just said you can't buy small amounts because there's a concern that they may have stolen them, but when it comes to the Golol Elyon, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying you would be allowed to buy small amounts. On the other hand, there is the girsa we have in front of us, b'moyed, meaning because on chalamoyed you're not allowed to sell in the normal way, and you're only allowed to sell small amounts at a time, only when, for example, a person doesn't have what to eat, so therefore he might be delegating it to his wife to do that. Anyway, Shapa'amim, Adam Bosh Limkur al Pesach Beisa, because Rav Shem Gamliel says sometimes a person is embarrassed to sell it in front of the door of his house, v'noisin l'ishtoy mecheres, and therefore he gives it to his wife and she sells it. So again, if we have the girsa b'mu'at, as Rashi does, then it means that, so even though, so in the Golol Elyon, Rashi explains, oil is very expensive over there. A person is makbid even on a dove amur. So normally, as we said, you wouldn't be allowed to buy oil from them. But Rav Shimon Gamliel says you would be allowed to buy a dove amur from a wife, from a married woman, because the likelihood is that her husband asked her to do it because he's embarrassed to sell it himself, to sell the olives. If we have the girsa b'moyed, then again it means chalamoyed. If he's desperate for money, then he delegates it to his wife to sell because he's embarrassed that people should know that he's out of money. The Gemara tells Ravina ikla lebe mechuza. Ravina one time visited the place mechuza. Also noshi debe mechuza. The women of mechuza of be mechuza came out. Romu kame kavli v'shirin. They piled up in front of him kavli. Rashi translates them as gold chains. There's actually an early achron, the Rashbash, who explains that actually it means like ankle chains, anklets, they're called in English, that women wear around their ankles. He says in Bavel and in Sfardish countries, that Ashbash himself lived in North Africa, they wear those, and that's what it actually means. Rashi, who lived in Northern Europe, is not familiar with that kind of thing, because women don't wear it over there, which is why he translated it as chains. Anyway, the shiri and bracelets. So Abu Minayu and Ravina accepted that he was coming there to collect tzedakah, and they gave him these chains or anklets or whatever and bracelets that are made out of gold, and he took them in collection of tzedakah. Omale Rabba Tesfal the Ravina Baltanya Gabar Tzedakah Makamim Mehen Dava Mur Avaloi Dava Meruba. What about, we just said before in the Braisa that Gabar Tzedakah can only take small amounts from women but not large amounts. And here, isn't there a concern that they stole something? Amalei, so Ravina says, no, Hani Lubnei Mechuza, Dava Mort Ninu. Relative to the people of Mechuza who are rich, these are considered a small thing, and therefore that's legitimate. So what we consider to be smaller or large is going to depend on the financial status, on the financial state of the people from whom you're collecting. Okay. The last Mishnah says, the last Mishnah of the Masechta, so now the point we're going to be dealing with in this Mishnah and in the Gemara is that when you give a craftsman a job to do, you give him something to clean or to make or whatever for you, there's often going to be some leftovers, and we have to talk about what the din is of those leftovers and that and the waste and whatever from the job. Who does it belong to? So the Mishnah says, Muchin Sha Kovas Motzi. When you have a laundryman do your laundry for you, do wash your woolen clothes. So now you have some muchin, you have some tufts of wool that come out of the garment when he's washing it and cleaning it. So then Harei Olu Shaloi, then he keeps them, and then he can keep them for himself, because the dove of muat and the owner is not normally makbid on it. And even Rashi says if he is makbid loy havik kpeda, it's not considered a kpeda. Basically, batel daita etzakolana. Most people are not concerned about those little tufts of wool, and therefore there's no problem of the laundryman keeping them. Motzi. On the other hand, then you give the clothing to a comber to comb out. So he uses, Rashi describes, he uses like thorns or something. He uses thorns to comb out the clothing in order to make it that this way it'll look more fluffy or whatever. So those Harei Shabalabais, those belong to the Balabais, because those you have, he removes a lot more tufts of wool. So that's a double choshev already, and the owner is not moichel on that. Next, koyves noto gimel chotin v'hen shaloi. When you send your clothes to be washed by a laundryman, so you have Rashi describes when they made a beged, they would often put three at the edge of the beged to keep it from unraveling. They would put three threads. The weaver would weave on three threads on the end of the garment of a different material, like to keep the edge of it from unraveling, like to serve as a hem. So now, when you send that clothing to be laundered, then that laundryman is allowed to take off those three, because that's what he does in order to make it look in order to make the edge look nice. Behein shaloi, and those three threads he can keep. Yosemi can, but if it's any more than three threads, harei or shabalabais, then he has to give it back to the balabais. Im hoya shocher agabi alavan. What if those extra threads are black threads on the edge of a white garment? So those make it look not very nice. Then he can take all of them, even if there's more than three threads, and the koivis, the laundryman, can keep them, because we assume the balabas does not want to have those black threads on the edge of his white garment. Next, hachayet shashir es achut kedei lisper boy. If you give a job to a tailor, you want him to sew or alter clothing for you, and you gave him thread for the purpose, and he has left thread that's enough to sew with, as we'll see in the Gemara, how much that is. Umatvis sholosh al sholosh, or he has left over a piece of material, which is at least 3 by 3, which is at least 3 by 3 etzbos, then he has to give that back to the balabais, because those are things that the balabais can make use of. Rashi says specifically, the maklis would be, for example, that he's smoothing out the edges of the garment, and therefore he's cutting off bits of material from the edge of it in order to make it nice and smooth and straight. So then if he cuts off a piece, 3 by 3 etzbos, he has to give it back, but any less than that he can keep. Next, Masha Chorosh Moitzi B'Matzad, when you have a carpenter who is doing work for you, and he takes off some of the wood using a matzad is like a kind of small axe. In English, it's translated as an adze, which is, it's similar to an axe. It has a wooden handle and a metal blade, but the blade is set differently on the handle than it is with an axe. It's set kind of at right angles, and it's used kind of like as a chisel to chisel out bits of wood. So that it produces only small pieces, then the carpenter can keep those small shavings of wood for himself. Of a kasho, but what he produces with a kasho, which is a larger axe, then that he has to give to the balabais, because those are larger pieces, and we assume the balabais is makbid on them. Now, this was all, everything that we said so far is when he's doing the work in his own workshop or something. But if he's doing it by the balabais in his house and he's hired by the day, then even the sawdust, for example, he's drilling and producing very fine sawdust, even that would be shabalabais. So Rashi explains that the whole previous part of the Mishnah was talking about a kablon. You contracted with him to build you a house or whatever, and then you're paying him for the job. So then we have the rules, what he's allowed to keep and whatnot. But when you're hiring him by the day or whatever, then everything, all of the waste goes to the balabais, even the sawdust. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, Lotkin Mochin Menakoivis, you're allowed to buy tufts of wool from a laundryman, McNeshain Shaloi, because as we said in the Mishnah, those belong to him because the owner was not makban on them in the first place. Hakoivis noto shnei futin al yonim behin shaloi. The laundryman is allowed to take the top two threads from the garment and keep them. Now the Gemara is going to ask, wait, we said in the Mishnah 3, so we'll see in a second. But he should not make on the garment more than 3 chuvin. So Rashi explains like this. Now we're talking about, this next part of the Braisa is talking about when we said in the Mishnah, you have the comb. You give clothing to a comber to comb for you in order to make it more fluffy. So now what he does is, Rashi describes, what they do is they attach loops. They sew loops along different parts of the garment, and then they use those loops to stretch out the garment on a frame, and then they comb it. So now you have to be careful not to sew on those loops too strongly, because then you won't be able to stretch out the garment enough. So all you should do is sew each of those loops on with only three stitches. Gilian Ashas points out that the word may not be chovin, but rather choichin, which means connectors. Whatever the point is, in other words, that each loop should be sewn on loosely with not more than 3 stitches. When he's combing the garment, he shouldn't comb it along the length of the shesi, because that's more likely to rip the garment. Only along the erev, which is where it's going to be stronger, because the erev threads are thicker. So now you have the places where it sticks out because it was stretched out with those loops. So those he should only smooth out and then straighten out the edges of the garment by cutting it with the scissors. Only along the length of the garment, not along the width. The pashtus, because although if you do it along the width, it's more likely to unravel or something. The imbolash voice ad tefach, if he needs to straighten it out and cut off a strip of material from the end in order to make it straight, ad tefach rashoi, then he'd be allowed to do that, even to take off as much as a tefach. Now that he'd have to return that piece to the balabas, because as we said in the Mishnah, 3 etzbos, he has to return to the balabas, but he is allowed to do that, and it's not considered that he's cutting up the garment too much.
Now the Gemara says Omamar. Now we said in the Braisa Shnei Chutin that he's allowed to, that the laundry man is allowed to take two threads. The Gemara says Va'anan Tznan Sholosh. What about we said in the Mishnah he can take three? And the answer is like Kasha Habal Limi V'Habaktin. It depends whether we're talking about thick threads or thin threads. If they're thick, then he can take only two, because more than that is going to be noticeable that the garment is missing something. If they're thinner threads, then he's allowed to take three of them. We said, we said when he's combing out the garment to make it fluffy, you know, he shouldn't comb it along the shesi, only along the erev. So the Gemara says, Valtanya Ikra, we have a braisa that says the opposite. The answer is like Kasha, Hobbit Glimmer, Hobbit Sarvola. There's a difference whether he's combing out a glimmer, which is something that's worn, every day. So if he combs it along the chassis, it's more likely that it's going to rip faster. It may not rip while he's doing it right now, but it weakens the weave, and therefore when the person is wearing it, it's more likely to tear. As opposed to a sarvola, is more like a nice coat, like a kapota or something that a person wears as a more bekovedika garment. So that one looks nicer. It looks more nice and fluffy when you do along the chassis. And this, since you don't wear it as often, there's less of a concern that it's going to rip. So therefore, that's the one that you should do along the chassis. We said you shouldn't attach the loops to stretch out the garment for the combing. You shouldn't attach each loop with more than three stitches. So Rabbi Yemiya says, what do we mean by a stitch for this purpose? When you're sewing, you put the needle into the fabric and then you pull it out. Is that considered, that whole thing to get the needle back on the same side as you started, is considered one stitch? Or maybe those are counted as two stitches. Maybe, in other words, each time you put the needle through the cloth is considered one stitch, or maybe not. Maybe it has to be that you go back and forth, and that's considered one. And the Gemara says, Teku, we can't be sure about that. We said, when you're straightening out the edges of the garment and cutting off pieces of material in order to do that, you can do that only along the length, not along the width. Again, we learn in a braisa that says the other way around. And again, the answer is like kasha, hobe glimmer, hobe hamyoni. Depends what kind of garment we're talking about. A glimmer, which you're wearing every day, the braisa then is saying that since you're combing it along the erev, so therefore it comes out the places where it sticks out are going to be along the length of it. So therefore it's at the end, it's at the long ends that you cut off material in order to straighten it out. Habahamyoni, whereas the original braisa that said that you should do the second braisa that says larochboy is talking about behemyoni, is talking about when it's a belt. Now a belt, you anyway only see in the two ends of it, so therefore you can straighten out along the width, and it won't be so noticeable. So the edges that you straighten out are only near the ends that are hanging down. Okay. Next. The Gemara says so far, those are rules. In other words, when people are dealing with clothing, combing it or washing or whatever, what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to do it, so as to damage the clothing as little as possible. Tananabonon, then we learn a braisa. Ein loichim in a sodik mochin. You're not allowed to buy tufts of wool from the sodik, because as we learned in the Mishnah, those don't belong to him, because those, since it's a large amount of wool that he combs off, he's expected to give it back to the balabayas. But in places where the minhag is that he can keep those tufts of wool, then you are allowed to buy it from him. In all places, you would be allowed to buy from him a pillow or a cushion that's full of those tufts of wool. My time a kanano b'shinui, because he was koina them with a shinui, and therefore they're his anyway. And then the Ravid points out, since after all, we don't know for sure that he stole it. If we knew for sure that he stole it, then we have what we learned before, that you're not allowed to buy it from him. But since here, anyway, it's only a suffix whether he stole it. So therefore, the fact that there was a shinui is a good enough reason to be able to buy from him. The Gemara continues, Tanan Abanan, Ein Loichin Migardi. Now, when it comes to buying from a weaver, so here you have, before we were talking about the laundrymen and the combers, now to begin with, when a person weaves garments, so you're not allowed to buy from him loy irin, so you're not allowed to buy from him the ira, which Rashi describes. Now, like this, you have, when you're weaving cloth, you have a shuttle that goes back and forth that contains the Erev thread. You have the Erev thread is wound around a spool. Then you have that spool is placed within a wooden or whatever, some kind of tube. And then you throw it back and forth. And that's how the cloth gets weaved as you raise and lower the sides of the loom, the different frames of the loom. Meanwhile, now you don't want all of the thread to fall out of this container where you have it. So you stuff in there a piece of cloth called an Erev. So now you're not allowed to buy that. That belongs to the Balabas, and therefore you're not allowed to buy that ira, that little piece of cloth that's used for the plug. You're not allowed to buy that from the weaver because it's not his. V'lo nirin, you also wouldn't be allowed to buy from him the nirin, which are the actual in a loom. You have in a loom you have a series of you have two or more frames, and each one has strings attached with it that have a loop in the middle. The threads, the shesi threads, are every other thread goes through one set of loops, and then threads between them go through the other set. And then when you raise and lower the frames, and that's how you weave the cloth. So now the nirin that that are used to make the cloth, those belong to the balabas, and therefore you're not allowed to buy them from the weaver. So the loy punkelin, you're also not allowed to buy from him punkelin, which Rashi describes. Rashi uses a French word to describe it. It means that you have, when you're weaving curtains, so you have those are made with a different kind of loom, with a standing loom. So those you don't weave them in exactly the same way as regular cloth, but you have the also it's something that belongs to the balabas that he provides them when you're weaving. So therefore, so again, then you're not allowed to buy it from the weaver. And also not what's left over on the spools of shesi thread. All of those we assume belong to the balabas. However, you are allowed to buy from them a finished piece of clothing, even if it's speckled, even if it's made of many different colors. And maybe that means that he took like a little wool here and a little wool there and eventually put it together in a beged. But after all, you have a shinui, and therefore he was koneh. You're also allowed to buy from them Erev v'shesi. You're allowed to buy from them a full spool of Erev thread or of shesi thread. And you're allowed to buy from them clothing. You're allowed to buy from them a wool or whatever that was spun or that was woven, because those already you have. Those he was coating with a shin. So that Amri. So they asked in the yeshiva, why do you have to mention that you're allowed to buy from him woven cloth? Hashta tovri shakli. If you're allowed to buy from him even what was only spun into thread, orug miboya. Do you need to say that you can buy from him what was already woven? For sure, he was coating it with a shinui. And the answer is my orig tiki. We don't mean actually woven. We just mean that he made like braids out of the. He made braids out of the threads. And even so, you're allowed to buy in from him because it's considered a shinim. Okay. Next, the next kind of worker that we have in connection with clothing is a dyer. So let's talk about him. Tonanabon, ein loichim natsaba loy oisois. From a dyer, you're not allowed to buy from him oisos, which are these samples that he does when you bring him a beged to dye. Rashi describes he cuts off a little piece and uses it to test whether it'll take the dye well. So now really he has to return that piece to the owner, but sometimes he keeps it, so you wouldn't be allowed to buy that from him. V'loy dugmos. Or another kind of sample is to begin with, the owner brings him wool to dye, not a finished piece of clothing, but rather wool. And again, he brings along a little bit. So the owner rather brings along a sample. He says, this is the color I want you to dye it. And then again, he may leave that sample by the other guy, but it actually belongs to him. You're also not allowed to buy from him pieces of wool that were torn off from the animal. He took off a little bit from the fleece at a time, because again, he may be doing that in strand steel. But you are allowed to buy from him. But you are allowed to buy from him a beged that has already dyed, or wool that was spun, or clothing. So again, the Gemara asked Hashtag Toby Shokel Begodim Baya. If you're allowed to buy from him even wool that was already spun into thread, how much more so you're allowed to buy finished clothing from him? And the answer is, my Begodim Namti. Clothing over here, we mean felt. So the felt is not actually, is not woven, but nevertheless, still, it's made into felt. There's no toggery, there's no spinning over there, but the fact is, there is a shinery over there, and therefore you're allowed to buy it. Next, Tonan Abonon, Hanoisin Odas La Abdon, when you give skins, when you give leather to a leather worker to make something out of it, Hakitsuin Vatlushin. So you have the kitsuin, which are the little pieces that the leather worker cuts off from the edges, again, in order to make the edges nice and straight, vatslushin, or little bits of wool that were left on the skin, and he pulls them off. Those belong to the balabais, so he wouldn't be allowed to buy them from him. But what comes out when he washes when he washes the skin in water, those are tiny amounts. Harei al shaloi, those he can keep, and therefore you'd be allowed to buy them from him. Okay, going back to the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah that the laundryman is allowed to take off the couple of threads by the edge of the garment, along the length of the edge of the garment, and we said maximum three, as we said, if it's small threads, and we said if they're black threads on a white garment, then you'd be allowed to take them off, then you'd be allowed to take all of them off. So im ho yashocha b'chol, the Mishnah had said, om Rabbi Yehuda, Katsura Shmei. So Rabbi Yehuda said, you should know that in Aramaic, a laundryman is called Katsura, the Katsura Shokilei. And appropriately for that, he's allowed to shorten the garment because he's allowed to take off threads from the end and keep them for himself. And in this connection, Rabbi Yehuda says, all of that still does count towards the measurement of tchelas, of tzitzis. We know that tzitzis have to be a certain minimum and maximum length, a certain minimum and maximum distance from the edge of the garment. The minimum is maloi kesher gudol, is the size of the last joint of the thumb. You have to have the tzitzis have to be at least that far away from the edge of the garment. So therefore, so those threads, if the laundryman did not take them off, they do count towards, when you're putting on tzitzis, you count them towards the measurement, and the tzitzis can be within, and the tzitzis can be a kesher gudol above the edge where those threads are. We don't say you have to first consider it, though those threads were removed. However, he says, V'yitzchok bri kopid alayu, however, my son Yitzchok is makbid on them, and he'll make sure to remove them before he puts tzitzis on his baggage. Okay, we said in the Mishnah Chayit Shir Minachot or Esachot Chola. We said that if a tailor left over a piece of thread long enough to sew with, so then he has to give it back to the balabas. So b'kama litper, how much is considered enough to sew? Amar Rav Ashi Meloy Machat Chutz L'Machat. It means it has to be the length of the needle as well as something beyond the edge of the needle. Because Rav Ashi explains, if the thread is only exactly the size of the needle, you're not going to be able to stick it through the garment, because you need enough slack to be able to get the needle through. So the question is, what do we mean? Do we mean that you have the length of the needle and then beyond the needle you have the equivalent of the length of the needle? So say the needle is 3 inches, then the Mishnah would be saying if he has 6 inches of thread left. Or maybe it means just anything more than 3 inches, anything more than the length of the needle. Toshma, we can prove from a brisa. The Tanya Chayet Shashir is a chut pochas mekadei litper boy. A brisa says that if a tailor left over from the thread that he was given by the balabas less than what can be sewn with, or matlas sheep chosim yishalosh al shalosh, or he leaves over a piece of cloth that he cut off the ends that's less than 3 by 3 etzbois, bizman shabalabais makbid alein harei lo shabalabais. If the balabas is makbid on them, then they go back to the balabas. Ein balabais makbid alein harei lo shalosh. If the balabas is not makbid, then the tailor can keep them. Now, if you say that what the Mishnah means is that if he leaves over, in our example, 6 inches of thread because it's twice the length of the needle, and you're saying that then it belongs to the balabas, then you can say, pochas mikan, fine, even if it's not 6 inches, it's less than that, because he was sixer. Conceivably, the owner could still use it And you could stick it through in you could stick it through the garment. It won't do for a full stitch. But for example, we learned at the top of the Amud about the chuvin, the temporary stitches that are used to attach the loops to the garment. You could use a small amount of thread, a smaller amount of thread like that, let's say 4 or 5 inches, you could use for that. So then you could say that if the balabais has machbet on them and he wants to use them for chuvin, then you have to return them. But if you're going to tell me that in the Mishnah, we mean that if it's anything more than 3 inches, anything more than the length of the needle, you have to return it. Well, if it's even less than the actual length of the needle, then what could the, or exactly the length of the needle, then the balabas can't even use it. Why would it be, why would it matter whether he's machbet or not? Obviously, therefore, the Mishnah must mean that it means double the size of the needle, and therefore the Braisa is saying if the thread is less than that, if the Balabais is machbet on it because he wants to use it for chuvin, then you have to return it to him, but otherwise you can keep it. Shmamina, so that proves it, that the basic halacha is when the thread is twice the length of the needle. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Masha Achora Shchola, we said, a carpenter, we said that what the carpenter, the shavings of wood that come off of the matzah, which we said is an adz, like a small kind of tool, those he can keep because those are finer shavings, but what he gets off of the kashel, which is a larger axe, those he has to give back to the balabais. So the Gemara says, Rumini, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, Masha chorosh moitzi b'matzad, what a chorosh produces with a matzah, the chips of wood that come off with that, b'hanifsek b'megera, as well as what he cuts off with a saw. How do you shabala bias? Then those belong to the balabais. And on the other hand, the bias continues. Vayotzi mitachas makdeach. On the other hand, the sawdust that comes when he from a drill or mitachas rehitni, or when he's planing the wood with a plane, which is also finer shavings. Vahanigra b'megera, or the sawdust that comes off from the megera. Hanifsek b'megera would mean, for example, you have a longer piece of wood and you saw it, and you have a smaller piece left over afterwards. So that he has to return to the balabas, but on the other hand, the shavings, the sawdust that's produced by the saw, harei l'shaloi, then he can keep it. So the braisa is saying that the Mishnah had said what he produces with a matzad, he can keep. The braisa said what he produces with a matzad, he has to give back to the balabais. Omar Rava, ba'asra detani didan ikatauti chatzini. The difference is, where the Tana of our Mishnah lived, the carpenters had two kinds of tools, l'chad, l'rabosi, korele kashel, or l'zutrasi, korele matzah. The larger one, the Tana, calls it kashel, because that's what the carpenters called it, and the smaller one was called a matzah. So therefore, you can distinguish between the one produces larger pieces, and the other one produces smaller ones. But Asra, the Tana bara, chad hu, in the place where the Tana of the Braisa lived, there was only one type of tool of this kind, that the carpenters regularly used for removing pieces of wood from the surface, and they called it matzad. So in other words, the matzad of the tan of the braisa is equivalent to the kashel of the Mishnah, and it produces large pieces, and therefore you have to return them to the balabas. The Mishnah had said, "Bimoya oitza oisa eitzo chulo." The Mishnah had said that if he's working in the household of the balabas, as we said, he's a worker, he's a hired worker by the day, then everything goes to the balabas. So tana rabbanim, we learn in a braisa, misapse avonim ein behem mishum gezel. People who are chiseling stones to smooth them out for building. Ein behem mishum gezel. There's no issue of gezel in the pieces that fall off. Mefaske lonis and mefaske gfanim. People who cut off, people who prune trees or vines. Umankefe higi. People who trim bushes, or weeds or whatever that grow between that grow among the plants. Umenakshe zroyim. People who pull out the extra ones between the vegetables. You have sometimes vegetables grow so you have, for example, vegetables that grow in place of vegetables or weeds or whatever that grow where they shouldn't, and they pull them out. But udre yirokas, or where they're hoeing and removing vegetables where they're planted too tightly together, and you have to remove some of them to allow the other ones room to grow. So all of these, this mancha balabais makbid alein, if the balabas is makbid on what you pulled out, yesh bam mishum gezel, then the issue of gezel, and you have to give them to him, ein balabais. If the balabas is not makbid, then you're allowed to keep them. And the Gemara continues, Om Rav Yehuda, kshtus v'chaziz. When it comes to kshtus, which is a type of herb that they use, it's called in English hops, they use it in making beer, and chaziz, which is unripe grain, which is sometimes picked early and used for animal food, ain't behem shum gezel, and there's no issue of gezel with them because most people are not makbid on them. But asra the kapti, but in places where they're makbid, yesh behem shum gezel, then there is an issue of gezel. And Ravina says, you should know, in Masa Machasya, which is where he lived, is a place where they're machmir, because Rashi says they have a lot of animals and they need good pasture. So they need this shus and chaziz to feed their animals. Marsha makes an interesting point over here that the Gemara put in the word who over here, which is unnecessary, and therefore, because the Gemara now really Bava Kama, as we've learned before, is only really part of a larger Masechta called Nezikin. Really, the three Babas we said are counted as one big Masechta. So the Gemara didn't necessarily bother to finish with a Dover Toiv as it often does, but it hints as one because you have the Yud of the Kap D and the Hey Vav Aleph of who spell out Yud and Hey and Vav and Aleph, which is kind of a combination of the names of Hashem, Yudke, Vavke, and Ekya. So therefore, the son of Masechta is hinting at finishing with a Dover Toiv, and Rashi in turn does the same thing. Rashi doesn't want to finish with the word Lemir Eh, because that ends with the word Ra'ah, so therefore he adds the word Toiv, and again, Maharshal says you actually take the letters of Ha Toiv, the Hey of Mira, and the word Toiv, those actually pair up with the letters that the Gemara finished the Masechta with. The test pairs up with the Yud because they're right next to one another. Similarly, the Hey and the Vav pair up with one another, and the Aleph with the Beis, and therefore both of them are finishing with a Dover Toiv. Maram Schiff mentions on the basis of there's a story in the Zohar that originally the place was called Kfar Tausha, and then there was a plague over there, and they did Tshuva, and then they renamed the city Masa Machasya. So he explains that they were marked with the Mal Yusa, that they wanted to make sure, therefore, because it's a rocky area, and otherwise the soil is not very good for planting, so therefore they grew, and therefore they raised animals over there, and they want to make sure that Tzadikim Mamonim Chavvalim Yosim Yigufam, so therefore they want to take extra care to make sure that there's good pasture available for their animals. There's a hadran that the Rebbe did on this Masechta in Tovshin Chavdalad. Part of it is printed in Lakuta Sichas in Chelik Yud Tes. There's a sicha over there about the Masat Se'avonim, about which connects with this week's parasha. We're saying that when people are chiseling stones, then the Ein Behem Shum Gezel. So he brings from the Rebbe Maharash, one time made a hadron on this Masechta, and was saying that, and connecting it within this parasha, you have Psol Lucha. Hashem tells Moshe, carve out the luchas, and you can keep the psolus for yourself. So the Rebbe Maharash was connecting that with over here. We're saying Ein Behem Shum Gezel, but explaining since the luchas were made out of sapphire, then there was a greater chiddush that Hashem had to tell him that you're allowed to keep those chips of sapphire for yourself. And the Rebbe Maharash over there discussed it with the Rashbats. It mentions over there in the Rishima about this. And so the Rebbe fabrained about it and explained in great detail that among other things we have to consider. We said this is in the place of the Balabas, then you have to give it to the Balabas. Isn't the whole world the place of Hashem? And so the Rebbe discusses over there, yes, but after all, the Luchas Shnius were created down here on earth. Moshe was hewing them out of the sapphire that he found under his tent, and therefore the Eibishter considers it, so to speak, as though they're not made in his location, and therefore he's giving them away to Moshe. And the Rebbe also develops the idea over there that in principle, maybe it should belong to the Jewish people, but Hashem, but after all, in a sense, the Rebbe talks about the first luchas didn't have psoilus and the second luchas did, representing that when it comes to the second luchas, the way that we learn Torah in the time of the second luchas, then we have forgetfulness and we have questions and answers and all that, and there's psoilus, and that belongs to Moshe in the sense that really the Gemara says the pilpul of Torah should have belonged exclusively to Moshe, but he was generous and gave it to the Jewish people. So that's the Solucha. As far as this Masa Machasya, Asur Dekapiu, the Rebbe develops the idea over there in the non-Mugadik part of the Sikha, that sin, again, like what the Maharam Shif says, they were Bali Tshuva, and therefore they're particularly concerned. Tzadikim Amonim Chav Valem Yosim Gufam, they're particularly concerned to make sure that the Behema, that the Nefesh of Bahamas, should be treated in a way to be able to be Mevarid as much as possible, and therefore, as the Gemara says, they were Makbid, and they wanted to make sure, as Rashi says, that it has Mira Toiv, that they have the best possible pasturage for the Guf and for the Nefesh of Bahamas, in order to be able to use it maximally in Avodas Hashem, and that's how it should be. The Eibishter should help, that we should all be given a Mira Toiv for everything that we need, begashmius of Ruchnius. Hadron alacha goes albasu, a slickle of a sect above a cotton. Mazel Tov.